Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph dated Tuesday, March 3rd, 2020. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Survey Looks at Main Street Parking. Poll Online, Mathy Calls for Meeting by Maria Nagel. The city wants more public input before painting stripes designating on-street parking spaces and traffic flow in downtown Bloomington. The city has put a survey online at http://ow.ly/capital Q small q capital P capital T 30 QK-G capital J capital M until March 12th to gather public feedback before it repaints parking and driving lanes on the resurfaced section of Main Street in downtown. The purpose of this survey is to assess the parking needs of our downtown patrons, the survey states. We've been downtown for almost 30 years. Parking has been a topic of conversation that whole time, said Jan Lancaster, owner of the Bistro at 316 North Main Street and current president of the Downtown Bloomington Association. There have been countless surveys, but I think this is the start to hopefully coming to a final resolution about what we should do. While a survey may be a step forward, Alderman Jamie Mathey, also a downtown business owner, wants more than a survey collecting that feedback. He is pushing for a special meeting of downtown stakeholders, possibly in early April, to discuss the issue further. Downtown is an outlier because there is no ordinance that governs how downtown striping or lanes can or should be handled, Mathey said on Monday. So that means we are not bound by any ordinance or rules that are in place, and we can do whatever we need to do if we think outside the box and work together on it. After the city resurfaced the street in spring of 2019, temporary white stripes were used to mark on-street parking spaces. While the city staff looked at whether traffic could be reconfigured to add more on-street parking spaces. In August, city engineers recommended leaving parking along Main Street and downtown unchanged after looking at other options that included adding angled spaces on either one or both sides of the street and restricting traffic to one lane but having a designated loading zone area in each block to keep the driving lane open. The staff determined the proposed changes could cause a loss of parking spaces or not significantly increase the number of spaces over the entire five blocks of Main through the downtown. After considering the options, the city's Transportation Commission unanimously supported the city staff's recommendation to keep the current traffic configuration with 126 parking spaces. But business owners wanted the issue revisited. After five downtown business owners, including Mathey, who owns Red Raccoon Games at 309 North Main Street, weighed in on the staff recommendations at the commission's September meeting, the panel decided to put its earlier recommendation on hold so the city could seek more input. This survey is a way to do that. I think getting more people involved is a good thing, said Mathey. The only thing that I didn't like about the survey is that it only shows the same designs for parking that were objectionable to people who were at the Transportation Commission meeting last fall and not any new kind of thinking outside the box designs. The online survey asked patrons to rate their satisfaction with downtown parking, state why and how often they visit downtown, and the average length of time they spend parked downtown, whether the street should be reduced to one driving lane, and whether they would be willing to pay for on-street parking if city parking decks were free. The survey also asked participants to describe the availability of parking downtown and whether they tried to patronize a downtown business but left because they were unable to find a parking spot. Other questions ask how far people are willing to park from their destinations and whether they have used any of the free 4-hour parking locations within the downtown. The results will be analyzed by staff and a recommendation taken back to the Transportation Commission, likely in April, with any associated work anticipated this spring and summer, said City Communication Manager Nora Dukowitz on Monday. Next, we have ISU students skip lines, vote early on campus. Turnout steady at Bloomington Normal voting sites, expected to pick up, by Paul Sweech. Jeffrey Hilbert remembers waiting in line at ISU's Bone Student Center for 2 hours and 15 minutes to vote in the fall 2018 midterm election. Oh, so much better, Hilbert said, of early voting on Monday at ISU's Waterton Towers Residence Hall complex. It was very quick. Monday was the first day of early voting at Bone and Waterston at the Normal campus. The sites are open to anyone residing in McLean County outside the city of Bloomington. Meanwhile, early voting continues at the Government Center in downtown Bloomington, on the fourth floor for Bloomington residents and on the first floor for McLean County residents outside Bloomington. After beginning February 6th, and early voting continues for a third and final weekend this Saturday and Sunday for any county resident at Eastland Mall in Bloomington. I knew this was happening today, Hilbert, 19, an ISU sophomore in elementary education from Arlington Heights, said. He was walking by the polling place in the Rosa Parks room when election judge Jenny Mahmood asked him if he was registered to vote. Hilbert re-registered because his address had changed. Then he voted. It was simple to do, Hilbert said. It was nice to get that out of the way and to know that my vote will mean something to the future. It's a steady day, County Clerk Kathy Michael said, of early voting at the two ISU polling places. As of 3 p.m. Monday, 737 people from McLean County outside Bloomington had voted early, 464 at the Government Center, 183 at Eastland, 42 at Bone, and 48 at Waterson, Michael said. Early voting continues at ISU until March 13th and at the Government Center through March 16th, the day before the primary election. Voting by mail has been steady, she said. As of Monday, the county clerk's office had mailed 1,446 vote-by-mail applications and 501 had been returned, Michael said. Meanwhile, voting by Bloomington residents has started to pick up, said Bloomington Election Commission Executive Director Paul Shannon. We are seeing a larger turnout on a daily basis, Shannon said. As of 2 p.m. Monday, 840 Bloomington residents had voted early, and 559 vote-by-mail ballots had been returned, Shannon said. We do anticipate early voting to pick up as Election Day gets closer and as people make up their minds, Michael said. Among early voters at Waterson was Will Cohen, 20, a sophomore biology major from Arthur, who re-registered first because he had moved. I just happened to walk by and was asked about it, registering and voting, Cohen said. I thought, it's here, let's get it done. With a lot of important things coming up late in the semester, it's good to get it done. Cohen really enjoyed voting using a touch screen, a voting method that he thought would be preferred by younger voters. It feels like, wow, I'm actually an adult, he said, with a smile, after voting in a presidential primary for the first time. It's voting for your country, Cohen said. It's pretty cool. Among voters in Bone's founder's suite were Taylor Copas, 19, a sophomore in international business from Cary, and Amy Bolt, 20, a junior history major from Naperville. Early voting is a great way to avoid the lines, Copas said. Early voting is great for students who may not have time to wait in long lines on Election Day, Bolt said. Noting that March is Women's History Month, Bolt said being able to exercise her right to vote is a privilege. Voting in a presidential primary takes on additional significance because the president is viewed as a symbol for the country, Bolt said. So this is pretty important, she said. Copas said, I'm realizing that my voice is heard, and it does make a difference. Next we have Evenglow to Expand Facilities in Pontiac by Paul Sweech. A multi-million dollar four-year expansion of a long-time retirement community in Pontiac should mean services for more Livingston County older adults in new buildings. Evenglow, the retirement community founded in 1958, is planning a new assisted living building, a new independent living building, and a link building between independent living and Evenglow's existing long-term care rehabilitation center to serve residents of both. Evenglow needs to stay current with the demands and expectations of current and future residents, Evenglow CEO Mark Hovren told the Pantograph. To be viable in the next 30 years, we need to go through this project to serve the needs of the people in Livingston County. Hovren said the dollar value of the project has not been finalized because construction won't begin for a year, but he said it's a multi-million dollar project. Construction will take 40 to 45 months, he said. Construction will happen in phases, so existing residents aren't displaced as work progresses. The Pontiac City Council got its first look at Evenglow's plan on Monday night. While the council took no action, that will happen later, Mayor Bill Alvey said the city leaders are enthused about the project. Their planned expansion is going to be quite an addition for our community, he said. In addition to new buildings, the expansion will mean an additional 4 assisted living units and an additional 20 independent units, Hovren said. But Evenglow's workforce should remain about 180 full and part-time employees, he said. The Illinois Department of Public Health will need to sign off on the project, Hovren said. Evenglow's best-known building is Evenglow Lodge, which was built in 1963 and has 80 units for assisted and independent living at 215 East Washington Street in Pontiac. Attached to the lodge is Jardis Health Center, which was built in 1984 and has 73 beds for long-term care and short-term rehabilitation. Evenglow's third building is Evenglow Inn, which was built in 2001, about a mile away at 1200 Evenglow Lane in Pontiac, and has 26 units for people with dementia. We recognized a need for additional independent living facilities, and the lodge building, built in 1963, requires improvements, Hovren said. We found it would be less expensive to build a replacement building at 1200 Evenglow Lane connected to Evenglow Inn. Even the new Evenglow Lodge would include 76 assisted living units, Hovren said. The 1963 building would be torn down and replaced with a 26-unit independent living facility, he said. Next, we have Teens and Ideas Compete. High school teams show innovation and passion at ISU event by Lenore Sabota. It was hard to top the passion and commitment Kendrick Beckel of Yorkville for the non-toxic pest killer and repellent developed with fellow student Matthias Habib of Sandwich. You wonder how safe it is? Beckel asked judges Monday at Celebrating High School Entrepreneurs while holding a spray bottle of Terra Busters in his hand. That's safe, he replied, answering the question by spraying the bug repellent into his mouth. Habib said, "It doesn't taste very good," but the judge's point was made, and it helped the pair be selected as one of the top 5 teams in the competition. Somewhere in the group of nearly 100 students at Illinois State University competing in 28 teams from high schools across the state could be the next breakthrough product, service, or nonprofit mission. Keep dreaming because the next big idea is in this room, said Judge Jim Nelson, Vice President, Education and Workforce Policy for the Illinois Manufacturers Association. Believe in yourselves. Pontiac Township High School teacher Paul Ritter is one of the founders of Celebrating High School Innovators, which alternates between ISU and Millikan University. You guys are the game changers, he said. It's exciting to watch what you're doing. Before the event started, Ritter said Innovators is a competition, don't get me wrong. But Innovators is also a way for kids to come together, celebrate what they do, learn from each other, and spark new ideas. It creates an amazing energy, and it's that energy that's a real gift. The top five teams each received $1,000. Each member of the five top teams, which were not ranked, will also receive $1,000 in scholarship money if they attend ISU. You are the innovators that we need on our campus, said Judge Patrick Walsh, ISU's Associate Director of Admissions. Three teams from Normal Community, Normal West High School's Innovative Entrepreneurs class, and two from Pontiac Township High School were among the 10 finalists. Lauren Durham and Claire Nye, seniors at PTHS, finished in the top five with their Operation Endangered Species project. They recently testified in Springfield before the Senate Environment and Conservation Committee on a resolution sponsored by Senator Jason Berrickman, Republican from Bloomington, and David Kohler, Democrat from Peoria, that urges the state to redouble its efforts to conserve the land, rivers, and lakes of Illinois for present and future generations to enjoy. The committee passed the resolution unanimously, and it's scheduled to be taken up by the full Senate this week. Durham said it was very nerve-wracking to go in front of the lawmakers, but as she talked, it became rather easy. Environmentalism is her passion, she said. Jay Gillespie, an NCHS senior who was part of the Grab and Grow team in the top 10, said being involved in the entrepreneurship program in Unit 5, led by Julie Hinton, has helped his public speaking skills and given him the opportunity to pick the minds of business leaders. He plans to study business in college. ISU Agriculture Professor Rob Reichard, who served as MC, said, "It really gives me hope for the future, seeing students looking for real solutions to real problems." Next, we have Normal Council OK's 2% water rate hike. Mayor, increase still below inflation prompted by costs. This is by Sierra Henry. The Normal City Council approved a 2% increase in town water rates Monday night to pay for improvements to the water system. The average Normal household could see around a 90-cent increase in its monthly water bill when the change start with the new fiscal year in April 1st. The council approved the rate increase with a 5-2 vote, with Councilmen Scott Preston and Stan Nord voting no. "We face price increases on our delivery of services, our chemicals that we use to treat your water. Those prices are not fixed for eternity. We have to struggle with that," said Normal Mayor Chris Coos. "If you look at this year's inflation rate of 2.84% compared to our 2% increase, we're actually a little lower than where we should be." The council also voted 6-1 to adopt the budget for the coming fiscal year following a public hearing. Nord voted against approving the budget. Council also approved several resolutions, including an agreement with Craig Onsrud for the operation of the Ironwood Golf Course Pro Shop and private golf lessons, a contract with Davy Resource Group not exceeding $41,978 to conduct a street tree inventory, and a $224,000 contract with EZGO of Augusta, Georgia, for 70 electric golf carts with trade-ins through the Omnia Partners Joint Purchasing Program. Turning to the State Digest, we have Police Groups to Oppose Ending Cash Bail in Illinois by Peter Hancock. Several statewide law enforcement organizations said Monday they will strongly oppose efforts to eliminate cash bail in Illinois, one of Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker's top priorities. "We are here to say we cannot and unequivocally do not support efforts being discussed to eliminate cash bail," Jim Kitechuk, executive director of the Illinois Sheriff's Association, said during a news conference. This is not the way to make the criminal justice system more equitable. It is not the way to make our communities safer. Kachuk and several other law enforcement leaders announced they had formed a new organization, Coalition for Public Safety. Its members include the Illinois Sheriff's Association, the Illinois Fraternal Order of Police, Illinois Fraternal Order of Police Labor Council, Chicago Lodge 7 Fraternal Order of Police, Illinois Police Benevolent and Protective Association, and the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police. Illinois enacted significant bail reform in 2017. Under the new system, people charged with most nonviolent crimes do not have to post a cash bond to get out of jail, but they may be subjected to other limitations, such as house arrest or wearing some kind of electronic monitoring device. Also that year, Cook County Circuit Court Chief Judge Thomas C. Evans issued a general order that greatly limited that court's use of cash bail. Advocates for eliminating cash bail say the system is unfair to poor people who cannot afford their bail, and it forces many of them to plead guilty simply so they can get out of jail. People who can afford their bail, on the other hand, often have better outcomes in their cases because they have more time to work with their attorney. But McDonough County Sheriff Nicholas Pettigout said bail is also an effective way to ensure someone will make their court appearances. Since the 2017 reforms went into effect, he said, the number of warrants issued in his western Illinois county has more than doubled, from fewer than 1,000 per year before the change in law to more than 2,000 per year. Since the reform, if you're a criminal, you are twice as likely to have a warrant for failure to appear and half as likely to cooperate with the criminal justice system, he said. Springfield Police Chief Kenny Winslow said judges already have authority to lower a bond amount or release people on their own recognizance if they deem an initial bond amount is too high. We just think that it's going to the far extreme of abolishing cash bail, and it's the wrong way to go right now, he said. So far, only a handful of states have eliminated cash bail, the most recent being New York, whose new law took effect January 1st. Since then, some law enforcement officials argue New York City has seen a significant spike in crime, including violent crimes committed by people on pretrial release. Just days after New York ended cash bail, there was a rash of individuals who were arrested, Pettigout said. While they were let out awaiting trial, they committed significant crimes again. We're not talking about small crimes. We're talking about murder. In Chicago, we have fourth positive test for virus in state. The wife of a man who is being treated for COVID-19 at a suburban Chicago hospital has tested positive for the virus, Illinois public health officials said on Monday, becoming the fourth person in the state to test positive for the virus. The unidentified woman, who is in her 70s, is quarantined at home and reported to be in good condition along with her husband, who is being treated at Northwest Community Hospital in Arlington Heights. Dr. Daniel Raven, director of the hospital's emergency department, said the husband, also in his 70s, was admitted over the weekend because he had a preliminary positive test for COVID-19, and doctors are awaiting confirmation of the test by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Also, 10 years sought for corrupt cops. Federal prosecutors are seeking 10 years each in prison for a veteran Chicago police sergeant and an officer in his gang crime squad who were convicted last year of using bogus search warrants to raid homes and steal cash and drugs. Prosecutors said in a court filing that the conduct of Sergeant Xavier Elizondo and Officer David Salgado was such a fundamental breach of the public's trust, the longtime cops deserve far more time behind bars than what sentencing guidelines typically call for, the Chicago Tribune has reported. Next, we'll change gears and we'll look at a review of Guys and Dolls, a Sure Bet for ISU. Jimmy Chrisman directs an ISU production of the 1950s musical Guys and Dolls that is full to overflowing with imagination, precision, and joy. It's a delightful night at the theater and not to be missed. The show revolves around some lovable gamblers in the New York underworld and the women they love. The impeccable timing in the book by Joe Swerling and Abe Burrows holds up well, and composer and lyricist Frank Lesser's winning score is as infectiously charming as ever here. Orchestra is conducted by Glenn Block. Crap game organizer Nathan Detroit, a delightfully dodgy Nathan Sudenga, hoping for a big payday, challenges notorious gambler Sky Masterson, a cool Nathaniel Douglas, to a bet he's sure he'll win. Sky has to take Save a Soul Mission Chief Sarah Brown, Emily Frank with gorgeous vocals, to dinner in Havana, Cuba. Sky accepts and finds winning the bet might mean losing his chance for love. Meanwhile, Nathan needs to deal with his own love situation. He's been engaged for 14 years to nightclub singer Adelaide, Alex Hibbard Brown, in a beguiling star turn, and she's getting impatient. Sarah and Adelaide, the dolls, are sometimes portrayed as ditzy or hysterical, but not here. Chrisman empowers them to be stronger and smarter than their guys, and when they take the last bow in this terrific show, it feels just right. Fresh, well-executed choreographer by Maggie Marlin Hess spices everything up, from kick lines to tap dances to salsa. There's not a beat in the whole show that doesn't feel carefully thought out. The palette is particularly stunning, all jewel tones glossed with patina, lighting by Trey Brazil. Set designer Caroline Deschelle came up with an angled cityscape that's echoed in the costumes by Amanda M. Bedker, all sharp fedoras, bright plaid suits, and dresses that hum with color. There are so many stunning stage pictures, one wishes for a pause button. There's lots of chemistry between the leads. Cody Rogers and Dylan DeWitt are charming as Nathan's sidekicks. Nolan Rice, Sarah's grandfather and Mission Band drum player, holds the heart of the show in his hands when he sings, "More I Cannot Wish You." That review was written by Nancy Steele Brokaw. In national news, we have former rivals endorse Biden. Klobuchar, Buttigieg back fellow moderate prior to Super Tuesday. Rivals no more, Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg united behind Joe Biden's presidential bid on Monday as the Democratic Party's moderate wing scrambled to boost the former vice president just hours before voting began across a series of high-stakes Super Tuesday states. The urgency of the moment reflected deep concerns from the Democratic establishment that Bernie Sanders, a polarizing progressive, was positioned to seize a significant delegate lead when 14 states, one U.S. territory, and Democrats abroad vote on Tuesday. Klobuchar formally ended her campaign and endorsed Biden on Monday, a day after Buttigieg announced his formal exit. Both Klobuchar and Buttigieg, who were Biden's chief competition for their party's pool of more moderate voters over the last year, declared their public support for Biden on Monday evening at a rally in Dallas. Klobuchar and Buttigieg became the second and third Democrats to abandon their presidential bids since Biden scored a resounding victory in South Carolina, his first of the 2020 roller coaster nomination fight. Sanders's senior strategist, Jeff Weaver, dismissed the importance of the new coalition, which he said would help highlight the divide between the true progressive wing of the party and those in the establishment. It's becoming increasingly clear that the candidates funded by big money and super PACs are coalescing behind Joe Biden, and that's not a surprise, Weaver said. I think it will add a lot of clarity to this race. And that concludes this first section of the Pantograph for Tuesday, March 3rd, 2020. We will continue the second half hour very shortly. Stay tuned.